Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
During this search on this past Tuesday, the detective called and thought he had found some carpal bones from the hand. And on Wednesday, he took them to an anthropologist who determined that the bones were not human bones. So there that I was crushed again because I still don't have closure. All I have is this burnt hand that's burnt beyond being able to detect it for DNA and one tool.
Twenty-eight-year-old Jameson Lemons disappeared from Savannah, Georgia on May 7th, 2017. On that day, Jameson had gone to his grandmother's house for Sunday dinner after he finished work. After that, Jameson returned to his home that he shared with his girlfriend, Brittany. That evening, Brittany saw Jameson leave in a truck with a man that she only knew by his nickname. That was the last time anyone saw Jameson. When he didn't return by the following morning, Brittany alerted his family. Ever since they received that call, they've been desperately searching for Jameson. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 122 of The Vanished. Jameson Lemons' story. Jameson's mom, Jamie, contacted me back in January asking if I would cover his story on the show. I see so many missing persons cases every day on social media, but I hadn't heard about Jameson's disappearance. To me, that's always a sign that a case could use more coverage. Jamie has four sons, but she and Jameson were particularly close. Jamie told me a bit about Jameson.
My son, Jameson Lemon, was a hard-working young man. He had his own place, his own car, he had a job. He never missed work. He was very dependable. He was dependable at work, and he was also dependable for his loved ones, his family. Whenever I needed him, he was here for me, and I didn't have to ask twice. Jameson was my son that wherever mom was, he was. Now I don't have that anymore. I have four sons, and of my four sons, Jameson was the one that was here for me the most. Jameson was my third oldest son.
Jameson disappeared on May 7th, which was a Sunday. He had spent time with his family that day, and nothing seemed out of the ordinary.
On the day that Jameson disappeared, he had just completed an 8-hour shift of work. After clocking out at work, he went to my mom's for dinner, and that was the last time that he was seen or heard from. He left dinner at around 3-ish. 3:30-ish on Sunday, May 7th.
Sometimes when a person goes missing, there are warning signs. They may confide in someone close to them that something is going on that they're concerned about. During dinner with his family on that fateful Sunday, they didn't get the idea that anything was wrong.
Nothing. Jameson was his chipper, smiley, laughy cell phone that day. It didn't appear as if he would be in any trouble later on that evening. He showed no signs of him being in trouble. Nothing out of the ordinary.
After leaving his grandmother's house, Jameson went back to the home that he shared with his girlfriend, Brittany. She saw him leave in a truck with a man that she didn't know very well. She only knew him by his nickname. When Jameson didn't return by the following morning, Brittany was concerned enough that she called Jameson's grandmother. His grandmother immediately alerted Jamie. They were all very concerned about Jameson, and 2 days later, Jamie filed a missing persons report with the Savannah Police Department. Initially, detectives assumed that Jameson had just taken off and would return. This is a very common assumption in missing persons cases, especially younger men. So many people are reported missing every day, and most are found. Jamie knew something was wrong, though, because she and Jameson were so close. She felt in her heart that something terrible had happened. Jameson was also a very dedicated employee, and it wasn't like him to be a no-call, no-show. Everyone's concerns continued to grow with each day, and even more so when his paycheck went unclaimed. It wasn't until just a day shy of the one-month anniversary of Jameson's disappearance that his case started to heat up, after another unfortunate turn of events.
We now know that one person is dead and another is in critical condition after a shooting last night. A local family says they believe this is connected to another investigation. New for you at 10, Fox 28 Shelby Roberts is live in the newsroom to show us why some believe that shooting is related to an ongoing missing persons case.
Trey, there are multiple families in mourning tonight. Today marks a month since 28-year-old Jameson Lemons disappeared, and it was his girlfriend and roommate that were gunned down yesterday near West 42nd and Borough Street. Tonight, Lemons' loved ones say the cases are connected. Raining Savannah skies mirror Jamie Young's stream of tears. It's been exactly a month since her 28-year-old son, Jameson Lemons, disappeared. Young and her family hosted a prayer vigil Wednesday afternoon in Lemons' honor. But now, Young says, one of the last links to finding her son is gone. Tuesday, Lemons' girlfriend, 26-year-old Brittany Brown, was gunned down near West 42nd and Borough Streets. 33-year-old Tony Stevens was also shot, and Savannah Chatham Metro Police say he's in critical condition. For months, Stevens and Brown both lived with Lemons in their Marjorie Street home. That is, until Lemons vanished. Family members say just yesterday, Stevens and Brown moved into their new 42nd Street home. That's when they were shot.
And since the killing happened, I got the feeling now that Jameson is dead.
Lemons' grandmother, Mary Young, says she believes Brown's death is related to the disappearance of her grandson.
I hate to see that happen to her, and I hope it don't be no more of that going on. I just wish people just tell us where Jameson at. That's all we want to know.
Now, Lemons' loved ones say they're not here to point any blame and that their hearts do mourn for all of the families involved in these series of tragedies.
When Jameson's girlfriend and his friend were both shot, everyone immediately thought that this must be connected. How could it not be?
They have not really been able to establish that. But in the beginning, it was thought that they were connected because of the fact that everybody that was involved knew Jameson. The girl that was shot was his girlfriend. The guy that got shot with her was his friend.
Everyone was wondering if Brittany was targeted because she was the last person to see Jameson leave in that truck on the night that he disappeared.
I believe that she was targeted because she knew what happened to him and they didn't want her to talk. She only knew who he had gone with, who he left the house with on that evening. And after that, she didn't know anything else. The only thing she was able to tell the detective is the color truck, the make of the truck, the model, and the guy's, his nickname. She didn't have a birth given name for the suspect.
They were able to catch the man who murdered Jameson's girlfriend and shot his friend.
Formal accusations against the man linked to a double shooting last month. Aherian Brown was indicted on charges of murder, possession of a firearm while committing a felony, and aggravated assault. The shooting happened on June 6th at West 42nd and Burrow Street. The shooting was also connected to the Jamison Lemons case.
What was so shocking was after they identified the shooter, they realized that it was someone who was very close to Jamison.
And the guy that did the shooting was my son's best friend. I have not heard anything in regards to his plea or anything. I'm not really sure how they caught him. Rumor has it that he, during the commission of the crime, he accidentally shot himself in the foot and had to seek medical attention. That's how they were able to detect him so fast.
The death of Jamison's girlfriend was potentially devastating to his missing persons case because she could have had more information. She was the last person to see Jamison leave with someone on the night that he disappeared. Her death also left many questions remaining. Why was she targeted along with his other friend and roommate? Why would Jamison's best friend murder his girlfriend? This has made Jamie question everyone who was close to Jamison and what their possible involvement could be in his disappearance. Who had a motive to make Jamison disappear? Is it possible that this is all connected? Jamison's best friend is currently awaiting trial for both the murder of Brittany Brown and the shooting of Tony Stevens, but the motive is still unclear. Was he somehow involved in Jamison's disappearance, or could he have thought that Brittany and Tony were behind it and acted out of anger over the situation? After Jamison's disappearance and prior to the shooting, Brittany and Tony had become very close. Could Jamison's best friend have suspected that they were behind his disappearance?
I don't know the reasoning behind the shooting, but I can tell you this. Everyone at one point were friends. My son and the girlfriend, they lived together in a rooming house. The guy that got shot with the girlfriend, my son helped him get a room across the hall from him and his girlfriend. Somehow, the friend and my son's girlfriend became really close. One day from a month after my son went missing, the girlfriend was killed. And 2 days before she got killed, the friend that my son helped get the room and the girlfriend moved into a different rooming house together. They moved out of where all of them lived together into a rooming house, a separate rooming house, just the two of them together. And this was, they had just moved out for 2 days before they both were shot.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families.
You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Early on in the investigation, they were getting tips that led them to conduct multiple searches, even sending them to another state looking for answers.
Because in the beginning, just from different people and in their scenarios, they were saying that my son's body was dumped in South Carolina and fed to alligators, which turned out not to be true. They focused here in Savannah in the beginning. They searched three lakes located in Savannah because someone said that my son's body was dumped in one of those three lakes. They searched all three lakes to come up with nothing. They searched two areas in South Carolina to come up with nothing.
A combination of tips and the pings from Jameson's cell phone eventually led them to a property about 45 minutes away in Effingham County, Georgia. The man that Jameson's girlfriend had seen him leave with on the night of his disappearance, well, he lives on this property.
That's how they were able to locate his last whereabouts, by use of cell phone pinging. They were able to locate his last ping at 167 Lanier White Road in Springfield, Georgia. It's like what we would call the country. There's nothing there. On that property, the property is huge. There's only three homes, small homes, and the rest is woods surrounding the three homes on like both sides of the road, nothing but woods. And he was taken to this property by the last person that he was seen with, and that person resides in one of the three homes on that property.
The combination of tips and the cell phone pings was enough for the police department to obtain a search warrant for this property. They executed this warrant on June 15, 2017.
I'm Andrew Davis out here in Effingham County off Lanier White Road. That's where a death investigation is going on right now involving both Savannah Police and Effingham County Sheriffs. I'm going to turn around here and show you exactly what's happening. You can't see much. Way back in the woods there, there are multiple cars from Effingham County and multiple deputies from both the Effingham County Sheriff's Office and Savannah Police. What Effingham County Sheriffs do tell me is that this is a death investigation. A body was found in the woods back here. They do not believe that it died of natural causes. They are saying natural causes is not the issue in this case. Multiple detectives are out here. There's also a scene over here. If I point this way for you. Back there, you can see some of the tape and some of the situation there. There's also seen they found a bloody piece of bedding, they believe, over there. And right now, we're looking at it as some sort of death investigation, possibly a homicide investigation. Savannah actually called Effingham County to give them the tip on this one to bring them out here, since this is Effingham County area in Springfield. The question that many have at this point, could this be the body of Jameson Lemons, who has been missing for multiple weeks from our area? This was one of the last places that he has been seen. So far, we cannot confirm or deny that in any form so far. All we can tell you is that there is a body in the woods that is being investigated by Effingham County Sheriffs, by the Savannah Police Department, who is also out here in Springfield off of Lanier White Road. And they are continuing this investigation. The coroner is also out here as they determine exactly what happened. We will have more for you throughout the afternoon and tonight on News 3 at 5 and 6.
As you heard in that news clip, it sounded like they had found a body. And that was also what Jamie was told by detectives when they came knocking at her door to notify her.
On the day of the day that they did the first search in Effingham County and found the hand and the tooth, I received a knock at my door between 9 and 9:30 a.m. from Chatham County detectives here where I live in Savannah, notifying me that they had found a body on the premises of his last location. It wasn't a body at all. It was just the hand and the tooth that they actually were, after digging, the human body parts that they found was a hand and a tooth. One of the body parts, according to GBI, could not be tested for DNA because it was too badly burnt. And the other human remain was just one single tooth that has been sent off to Texas, and the detective is still awaiting results from the tooth. It's been since June, but the detective is leaning towards the fact that my son's body was dismembered, possibly burnt, but was unsuccessful at burning, so they dumped his body somewhere else. All I have is this burnt hand that's burnt beyond being able to be tested for DNA, and one tooth. I mean, that's all that the detectives were able to find during their first search.
Since the hand that they recovered was so badly burnt, the only hope that they have at this point is to get a DNA profile from that single tooth that was recovered. I had interviewed Jamie back at the end of January, and they were still waiting for DNA results. Just this past week, they let Jamie know that they were able to determine that the tooth had belonged to a male, but the DNA results are still pending. There were other items that were located during that search that have been sent off for testing. It's believed that these items may have been used during the commission of the crime. These items included two machetes, a short blade sword, a shovel, rubber gloves, concrete, and some bullet casings. Back in January, investigators returned to the wooded area where the hand and the tooth had been found, with the hope that they might possibly be able to recover more remains.
They just recently did a second search of the same property this past Tuesday. They just searched again to come up with nothing. And during this search on this past Tuesday, the detective called and thought he had found some carpal bones from the hand. And on Wednesday, he took them to an anthropologist who determined that the bones were not human bones. So there that I was crushed again because I still don't have closure.
One thing that continues to remain a mystery in this case is the why. What could possibly be the motive behind this?
According to the detective, the guy that he was last seen with had only known my son for about 2 weeks or less. The only information that the person of interest has given detectives is that he picked my son up from Savannah, he drove my son to Springfield, and that my son was on his property on the day that he went missing. But after that, he doesn't admit to anything else. We have had so many different scenarios come our way. According to the detective, he doesn't think that any of those motives that I was given has anything to do with my son's disappearance. He's not sure about the cause of the disappearance, but he's still working hard on it.
Detectives have interviewed this man, but they haven't been able to get him to open up about what may have happened.
He has been interrogated. He has been incarcerated. He has actually, about 3 weeks have gone, 3 weeks ago, got admitted into a psych institution. They're still on him, but being that he has an attorney and won't talk, they can't really interrogate him anymore.
When Jamie was telling me about this, I thought for sure this guy would have had some kind of violent criminal history.
He did not. His record was clean. His record was clean. Even as a juvenile, he had no record.
One startling piece of information is that this man was incarcerated, but is now free. How do they find a burnt hand on your property and you just go free?
He was incarcerated the day that they did the search of the property and found the two remains. He stayed in jail for over 90 days, but he had to be released on bond because the DNA results had not come back yet, and they could only hold him for up to 90 days without bond. And then after that, he could be bonded out. So his mom bonded him out after the 90 days.
Following his release, this man has struggled with some mental health issues.
3 weeks ago, he was admitted into a psych institute because he was seeing ghosts and demons. In the beginning, the detective said that he had been diagnosed as having psychosis. The day of the search, the guy was sleeping in the woods. He had a cot in the woods that he had been sleeping on. During the time that my son disappeared, it was he and his brother living there. The mom had moved out and left the two brothers there together.
Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. One positive aspect of Jameson's case is that the detectives have been working very hard to solve it. They're trying to provide some closure for Jameson's family, and they're not giving up.
He keeps in touch. He updates me daily. He's fantastic, and he even includes me. Like yesterday, he just sent me a couple of names and asked me if I had ever heard of these two people, and I had not, so the only thing he wasn't able to tell me is if they were persons of interest, which I did try to get out of him, but he wouldn't share that information.
Currently, they've sent the items recovered from the property in Effingham County to a couple different crime labs, but they're still waiting for the results of all of this testing. Hopefully, there will be some answers soon. If the tooth and the hand don't belong to Jameson, they belong to someone. Jamie worries that even if the results show that the tooth belongs to Jameson, that they may never recover more than the hand and the tooth, and she'll be left to wonder where Jameson is and what exactly happened to him. Even though it appears that there may be some answers in this case, there are still many questions. They haven't been able to establish a motive. There's still a lot of speculation regarding the murder of his girlfriend. Some people believe that she was killed because she knew too much and they didn't want her to talk, while others believe that she was killed because she had Jameson set up. But the possibility remains that there's no connection at all. Maybe this other person acted alone for some reason that no one else has figured out. We know that in the months following Jameson's disappearance, this man was sleeping on a cot in the woods and later spent time in a mental health facility because he was experiencing psychosis, which caused him to have hallucinations of ghosts and demons. If the shooting of Jameson's girlfriend and roommate are not connected to his disappearance, is it possible that all the speculation early on about Jameson's girlfriend setting him up could have led his best friend to shoot her? Any way that you look at it, Jameson's disappearance has had a domino effect, and now several families are struggling with loss. Jameson is missing, his girlfriend is deceased, and his best friend will likely spend many, many years behind bars. But the person that the police believe is responsible for the event that started all of this, the disappearance of Jameson Lemons, is still free. If you have any information about the disappearance of Jameson Lemons, you can call Crime Stoppers at 912-234-2020. You can also call Captain Daly at 912-663-4138. If you would like to contact Jameson's family directly, please call 912-631-9759. If you'd like to follow his case on social media, look up Let's Find Jameson D. Lemons on Facebook. You can also submit information to his family through that page. Before I go, I wanted to give you a quick update on a case that I covered more than a year ago in episode 56. If you haven't listened to the episode about Aaliyah Lunsford yet, you may want to fast forward through this update. 3-year-old Aaliyah Lunsford was reported missing by her mother Lena back in 2011. In November of 2016, Lena was charged with the murder of Aaliyah, although she's never been found. Lena finally had her day in court, and as suspected, it was Aaliyah's older siblings, who are now teenagers, who came forward with information that led to her arrest. Her two older sisters testified that they saw Lena hit Aaliyah in the back of the head with a wooden slat from their bunk beds. They said that Lena was more harsh on Aaliyah compared to the other children because Lena's mom had had custody of Aaliyah while she was in prison. Lena became jealous of the relationship between Aaliyah and her grandmother. When Lena hit Aaliyah in the head, she fell to the floor and couldn't get up. Lena left the little 3-year-old there and didn't allow anyone to help her or call 911. The oldest sister eventually took Aaliyah to bed, and this is when she noticed that the back of Aaliyah's head felt squishy. Her sister, who was only a child herself, gave Aaliyah some medicine and vitamins, but by the next morning, she was no longer breathing. Lena apparently attempted to revive her, but when that failed, she put her in a laundry basket, covered her with clothes, then got all of the kids in the car and went driving around until she found a place on a dirt road to dump her. The children were threatened to keep silent, which they did for many years. Lena lost custody of her remaining children, who were adopted by another family and eventually confided in them. Sadly, they had lived in fear even after being adopted. They were afraid that Lena would track them down and kill them too. Just this past week, Lena Lunsford Conway was convicted of murder of a child by a parent by failure to provide necessities, death of a child by parent by child abuse resulting in injury, and concealment of a dead body. The jury had the option of recommending mercy, which would have allowed her to be eligible for parole in 15 years. Lena's family had a chance to address the jury, and they asked them not to show mercy because Lena had shown Aaliyah no mercy. Lena's former attorney requested that they show leniency because Lena, too, was a victim of abuse. She had been raped by her own father starting at the age of 6. They elected not to recommend mercy, so Lena will likely spend the rest of her life in prison. She will be formally sentenced at a later date. That brings us to the end of episode 122.
I'd like to thank Jamie for helping me with this episode. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this podcast, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Would you like to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. Rate and review on Apple Podcasts. Your 5-star reviews help others find the show. Another way that you can support The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links to the special deals mentioned in this episode in the show notes. Next week, I'll be traveling to CrimeCon, and I'm looking forward to meeting all of you who are attending. You can find me on Podcast Row. Due to the time commitment for the trip, there won't be a new episode next week, but I will be back with episode 123 the following week. Thanks for listening.
Right now, he's still considered missing and not deceased because they don't have a body to go on, just body parts.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.